The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Whether you're making the same breakfast that you have every day or baking a cake for an extra special day, eggs are a staple in our diets. Eggland's Best eggs are nutritionally superior to ordinary eggs, containing more vitamins and 25% less saturated fat. Not only are they better for you, but Eggland's Best eggs taste better too. There's a reason that they're America's number one eggs. Visit egglandsbest.com for additional information and delicious recipes.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And let's go with the much anticipated Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Chris Jericho, Duff McKagan calling. You know what? I just found out it's a really bad idea to take a dog named Shark down to the beach. Shark! Thank you. Bye.
That is a good one, all in the delivery of Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Duff McKagan. Thanks, Duff, for delivering each and every week. Always great starting the weekend with a laugh and starting your year with a laugh with one of the greatest parties you could ever have. Talking about March 14th, the 18th, the Four Leaf Clover, Chris Jericho's Rock and Rest and Rager at Sea. Sign up now for the pre-booking list, and you can get your cabin before anybody else before we go on sale to the general public. And if you do that and book your cabin during the exclusive pre-sale, you'll get a picture with me and a commemorative cruise flag, Chris Jericho Rock and Wrestling Rager flag. You can only get that if you sign up early. And of course, you'll be treating yourself to the vacation of a lifetime when we set sail next March. It's going to be a blast. I'm already working hard on booking talent. Actually, I got the lineup all set. We're going to announce that probably in a week or so. Just go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com, sign up for the exclusive pre-sale, get the commemorative exclusive flag, a picture with me, and reserve your cabin today. All right. Come rock with Fozzy as well in the UK. The European leg of Fozzy's Save the World Tour kicks off November 29th in Liverpool at the famous Cavern Club, where the Beatles got their start. We're going to do a deep dive on the Cavern Club and talk as Jericho in a week or two. There's only a handful of tickets left for the Cavern Club. Manchester sold out. Newcastle still tickets for that at the Riverside. Glasgow sold out. Dublin sold out. Belfast at the Limelight One, still some tickets left. Chester sold out. Swansea, Nottingham, London sold out. Still some tickets left for Birmingham and Bournemouth. We start, like we said, on November 29th in Liverpool. We end in London on December 12th. Go to FozzyRock.com for all ticket information and VIP information. Of course, you can get an exclusive concert with Fozzy before the show if you do the meet and greet, VIP meet and greet. And don't forget, too, the Save the World Tour continues in the States April and May. All those dates are on FozzyRock.com. We just announced that tour a couple days ago. Lots of Fozzy action, lots of cruise action, and lots of AEW action as we get ready for Full Gear Full Gear on Saturday. Guy who had an amazing, amazing match on Dynamite last night. His first on Dynamite. Talking about Leo Rush is here on Talk is Jericho today. The buzz is crazy. He made his AEW debut at Double or Nothing in the Casino Battle Royale. Explains how that whole thing came together. He's got quite a story. We'll get all into it. He was only 22 years old when he signed with WWE 4 years ago. He talks about being released from WWE early this year and why he announced his retirement this past June when he was only 26 years old and why he came back. You hear about his relationship with Vince McMahon and Triple H, what inspired the Leo Rush name and gimmick, and the run he had with Bobby Lashley in WWE. He also talks about his time at Ring of Honor and New Japan Pro Wrestling, shares the first conversation he ever had with Tony Khan, who was a big supporter of his, and what prompted him to give pro wrestling another shot. He stole the show last night in Dynamite. He's going to steal the show today. Great conversation with Leo Rush coming up now on Talk is Jericho. So we have been talking about doing this for a while. Leo Rush here for his Talk Is Jericho debut. And I remember a few years ago having a couple DMs back and forth, but maybe doing something, but I was working here and you were working in WWE and you can't cross the streams, so to speak, right? But no, you're here.
I know. Yeah, we've, I feel like it's been some years in the making. I definitely wanted to try to get it done because I'm such a huge fan of you and such a huge fan of the podcast. And yeah, you talk about some really cool stuff and you touch on some things that not a lot of people, you know, feel comfortable touching on. So I like it. I like it a lot.
Well, it, like I said, it's great to have you in AEW, but it's a little bit of a surprise just to jump right in because I know a few months ago, I mean, it could have been a year ago at this point, you came in and did a shot for us.
Yeah.
And then right afterwards, you said that you were done with the business and then you just appeared back in AEW. And I was like, well, that's really cool. Kind of talk about how that all happened.
Yeah, that was such a crazy, crazy ride that was. Just from the point of, you know, getting that opportunity, knowing that I was going to be in AEW or at least appear on AEW, and it being such a surprising thing to a lot of people, because I remember there was a bunch of names being thrown around, like who was going to be the wild card. And I remember my name wasn't brought up once, and I thought that was so cool.
This is the Casino Battle Royal, where you were the Joker, which is the last guy, so nobody was guessing you.
Yeah, nobody. And I thought that was pretty cool, that nobody was talking about me, because I knew that it was going to get a genuine surprise reaction. So I was pretty excited about that. And then when the match happened, I didn't know that I got hurt during the match. I knew that there was something wrong. And I never felt anything like that before.
What did you do?
I ended up separating my AC.
Oh.
And when it happened, it felt wonky, but you know, I kept going. I kept pushing through the match. And by the time I got eliminated and I tried to get up, I just couldn't move my arm. And I was like, oh man, this is strange. And I'm probably legitimately fucked up right now. And I got scared. I panicked. So many thoughts were going through my head at the time. But when I initially made that retirement announcement, there was so much going on in my life personally at the time. And, you know, my frustrations with the business. And, you know, there was a lot. And I'm sorry if I'm not coming off as clear as I want to, because even now this is you know, just talking about it is pretty heavy, just because it was a decision that wasn't an easy thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I dedicated my entire life to wanting to be a professional wrestler, more specifically wanting to be in the WWE. And then when I got signed at 22 years old, which, you know, I was a kid.
That's so young.
And I was learning. I was kind of rolling with the punches and trying to adapt at every opportunity that came to me. And I feel like there was a lot of confusion and there was a lot of frustration, and I didn't understand why I wasn't, I don't know,
used more? Or
not used more. I think the overall perception of me kind of got to me a little bit, if I'm being completely honest. I think the overall perception of me of being like kind of like cocky or standoffish or you know, an asshole. Mm-hmm. I think that got to me a lot. And it's hard to, you know, I can't explain to hundreds of people that I'm working with, you know, what I've gone through in my life. And, you know, it's a long story. So
sure.
I tried to, you know, just go to work, do what I had to do in order to, you know, provide for myself and my family and stuff like that. So, you know, it was rough. It was rough balancing all of that and trying to please people and making sure that, you know, I'm not pissing people off or stepping on anybody's toes and stuff like that. But, yeah.
It happens quite a bit, just to jump in. Like, I see it. I've seen it when you sign to a huge company, how old are you now? 26?
26. Yeah.
26, right. Which is still very young. But at 22, I mean, that's so young to have to deal with the big league pressures. And most people that I've seen that have signed at 22 from our younger Teddy Hart and Rene Dupree and these young guys, it's hard to be mature enough to understand what's going on. Right?
No,
I mean, does that have something to do with it? I'm sure.
No, for sure. For sure. And, you know, obviously at the time, I'm not going to say that I'm, you know, immature or realize that I'm immature. You know, I just know me for me. And I don't know if that's mature.
You're 22, though.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't have the life experiences that guys in their 40s do. And most guys in WWE that are on top are in their late 30s and early 40s.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I that definitely played
or a role. Here, too, in AEW as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that definitely played a role, you know, looking back at it now and looking at, you know, everything that has happened since then. There was definitely some immaturity factors that played a part.
Right.
But, you know, I feel like that's life. I feel like, you know, everybody goes through that. And, you know, people kind of have to learn on their own and learn themselves. And I'm glad that I did learn. I'm glad that I did go through all of that because I wouldn't have the mindset that I have now. I wouldn't have the knowledge that I have now. And I don't think I would be in AEW now if I didn't, you know, grow as a person.
Right.
Yeah.
So when you decided to walk away from the business, it was because you got hurt and all these other issues kind of compounding and building up. It wasn't too long before you came back into the business, AEW. So what kind of switched the gears to where you're like, maybe I spoke a little bit too early here about leaving and retiring?
I think my intent was there, was right. The reasons behind me retiring and wanting to walk away. Maybe I needed a little more time to think. Maybe I needed to go through that injury process in order to figure out why I was feeling the way that I was feeling or, you know, why I didn't want to walk away. But I think a big part of that was, I think I kind of started giving up on myself a little bit. And that's the first time that I said that. And it's crazy that I am saying that, because I've never been, you know, the kind of person to kind of let the negativity block out everything that's positive in my life. But I feel like I was getting to a point where, I was at a standstill and, you know, the injury obviously didn't help. But yeah, I think I stopped believing in myself a little bit. I stopped believing that I could be everything that I said that I would be in wrestling. And it was a tough pill to swallow, I think.
When you lose your self-confidence in the biz, in anything, it's hard, especially in this business.
Yeah.
You have to have it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I'm sorry. It's a very heavy subject for me.
Sure it is. But I wanted to know because it's something that was right in the forefront of when you came back. I know that Tony Khan was always a big proponent of yours and a big fan of yours. Was Tony calling you during this time frame? Like, I guess I'm asking what snapped you out of the funk to say, okay, I'm going to go and get back in the biz and go back to AEW.
There was a couple of things. I think one, Tony being as supportive as he was, him being as understanding as he was, you know, he didn't push the idea of me coming back. He didn't push the idea of me staying away. He just wanted to understand who I was. He wanted to understand, you know, what I was thinking and what I was going through and who I am, because, you know, that was the first time that I met Tony at Double or Nothing. Yeah, we were still figuring each other out, and I think he was intrigued by me because he had met me before, but we never talked. But I think I felt comfortable around Tony. I felt comfortable being in the locker room for the short time that I was in the locker room at the pay-per-view, and it felt different. It didn't feel like WWE. You know, even though I was seeing the same faces. And I was, you know, the backstage environment looked the same and, you know, I'm still in a stadium, stuff like that. But there was something different about it that it made me feel like this was a second chance. It felt like a second opportunity for me. Another thing that played a huge factor, I think, was when I realized that I put myself in a position to do something bigger than wrestling. And not saying that in a negative way. Mm-hmm. And I hope that you can understand this, but
absolutely.
I think
obviously talking about your music.
Yeah. I think between everything that I'm doing, between my music, between wrestling, being a dad, being a husband, I think I saw the bigger picture for the first time. You know, when I was first starting out in wrestling, I was just moving a million miles per second, mm-hmm. you know, just moving forward, not even really appreciating what I accomplished, just wanted to move on right to the next thing, right to the next thing, right to the next thing. And having just very specific goal in mind. And I think once I reach that, I'm always asking what's next, what's next, what's next. But seeing that I had an opportunity to rewrite my story or write my story in a way that can inspire so many other people that have looked up to me. And I think even the fans and my peers and people who have followed my career, like this younger generation of wrestlers, you know, people like Dante, people like, you know, a Darby or MJF, you know, these guys were, I remember, you know, when I was in Ring of Honor, like these guys were like trying to break out and, yeah. you know, build a name for themselves. And I would get messages from different people saying just how much I've influenced their careers or how much I motivated them. And that's such a crazy thing because I remember I used to always be the young guy in the locker room. I used to always be that guy that's saying like, oh, it doesn't matter how green you are. As long as you, you know, believe in yourself and you work hard, then you can accomplish anything that you want to accomplish. And that was me. And I feel like, you know, obviously not saying that I've paved a way for someone, but the same way that I looked up to guys like you or guys like Eddie or guys like Rey Mysterio or Jeff Hardy and stuff like that, you know, there's a younger pool of talent that look up to guys like me. And I think that was pretty powerful. Mm. And
almost owed it to them to come back.
Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't say owe it to them, but I thought, you know, inspiration is just such a powerful thing, especially when it's like right in your face. And, you know, someone is saying that you inspire me to do what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And that's powerful to me. You know, I always try to be a good role model for anybody. And I think, you know, maybe that's the fatherly, mm-hmm. you know, side of me. But no, I feel like I have an opportunity to do something pretty special within AEW. And I want to take that opportunity. I want to be an inspiration to people, you know, because my story is pretty crazy.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Let's talk about your story.
Yeah.
Like once again, because it's always interesting to me. When I started 31 years ago, I was a small guy. You're too small to make it in wrestling. Mm-hmm. And then obviously as time transcends, it really doesn't matter size, whatever. But you are a smaller guy, like a Rey Mysterio, like mm-hmm. you mentioned, like Darby. All of you guys, top talents. But when you first decided you wanted to get into wrestling, was there that stigma like, really? You're a small guy.
Yeah, that was rough. I remember when I first started training, my coach had told me, my trainer who passed away from leukemia, RJ Meyer.
Where was that at? What part of the country?
Maryland.
Okay.
Maryland. I trained at MCW Training Center.
Okay.
And I remember him telling me that I believe in you. I believe that you're going to get to where you're going or where you want to go, but your path is probably going to be a little different than most people. And I knew what he meant. He didn't say that, oh, you're a small guy, mm-hmm. you know, it's going to be harder for you. But I knew exactly what he meant. I knew that I was going to have to, you know, work twice as hard. I was always going to be fighting that uphill battle. But that didn't stop me. I feel like that's never stopped me. I've always had such a competitive nature about mm-hmm. me my entire life. I played sports my entire life. I played baseball, basketball, football. You know, I was an All-American amateur wrestler in high school, wrestling at 112 and 119. So I was always like a smaller guy, but I always had,
you had the drive.
I had the drive, and I believed in myself a lot. And I've never been afraid of, you know, putting in the work or putting in the hours. And you know, I always had like a big man like mentality, and I feel like that has pushed me through life. And you know, part of the reason why I'm in this position, you know, today.
I had that too when I started. It's like I realized I can't be the biggest guy on the card, but I can have the biggest personality or the biggest connection with the crowd or the biggest character. There's other ways to be big in wrestling other than just physical stature. Because as you know, we've seen the 6'5", 280-pound muscle heads that don't last a year.
Yeah,
it just, that's the perception of what a wrestler is, but the reality of what a wrestler is comes in how you connect with the audience and how big your personality basically is, you know?
Yeah. I'm glad that I went through what I went through in WWE. It taught me a lot. It taught me how to really push out that larger than life kind of like persona. And I think that helped me build my name. It helped me get through a lot of things, like even in life. You know, I remember there was times where I would kind of cut on that switch, like in real life, if I needed to like push through something or if I needed to you know, get through a certain situation, I would like turn my personality up, like how I was on like Raw, and I would just make myself feel better about the situation itself. But I don't know. I learned a lot.
When you first came to WWE, did you sign? You mentioned you signed at 22. Was it for NXT? Was it for 205 Live? Kind of, because I know you said you mentioned Ring of Honor. Mm. What was the journey that led you to WWE? How'd you get signed to there? And what was the idea when they brought you in?
Yeah, when I got signed, I remember I didn't re-sign with Ring of Honor.
Because you were there for a few years?
I was there for only a year. I had won their top prospect tournament.
Gotcha.
And I was there for a year. And I remember I didn't want to re-sign because I always wanted to tour more overseas. I remember I did a tour over in Canada, and then I was like, man, that was cool. And then I had a tour in Mexico, and I was like, oh, that's really cool. And then I toured in like Europe, and I just wanted to keep that momentum going, and I wanted to wrestle everywhere, and I wanted to be in the pool of names that, you know, those conversations of some of the best like indie wrestlers like on the market. I wanted my name to be talked about in the same, you know, light anything at the time, you know, those guys, you know, like Ricochet was on the indies at the time. I wanted to be in
the guy who could travel the world at the highest of levels.
Yeah. And I remember being super inspired by the Bucks at that time, you know, because they were in the Ring of Honor, but they were doing New Japan, they were doing PWG, they were doing so many things. And I wanted to be like that. And then when I got signed to NXT when I was 22 years old.
Did you have to go for a tryout camp, or how did they?
No, I actually ended up being in that class, the same class as Adam Cole, Dijak, Fish, O'Reilly, all of those Ring of Honor guys. And I thought that was so cool. I don't know. That was very wild to me that I was a part of that class, and I didn't have to, you know, try out. And I thought that was really cool. I felt like I accomplished something.
It's telling, yeah.
Yeah. But when I got there, it was strange because I was being told that, oh no, you're not ready for TV. You need more experience and stuff like that. And you know, at the time, I was just like, I mean, I guess I understand, but why did you sign me?
Right.
Yeah, it was strange.
But they do that though, dude. You see it all the time. Like I remember I worked with like Shinsuke Nakamura in Japan, like at one of the WWE shows at the Sumo Arena, for example. And guys, amazing, tear the house down. And he goes back to NXT, or Finn Balor, or Samoa Joe. I'm like, why? I said to Vince, why do you have these guys in NXT? Like, they're headlining major show guys.
Yeah.
But there was just this, we got to go to NXT and learn how to get experience and learn how to work. It's like, they know how to work.
Yeah.
They're ready.
Yeah, I never voiced that opinion. I always thought that.
What are you gonna say? You can't really
say anything. I can't say anything. But I remember I'll never forget. I was doing a promo class in NXT and
Who was leading it? Dusty?
No, I think Carino.
Okay.
Gotcha. I believe Carino was leading at the time, and I remember the writer, the lead NXT writer, was there. And I'd asked him to watch my promo, and he said that he would. And as I'm doing my promo, I'm kind of like looking at him to see if he's watching, and he's just like texting.
Oh.
And I was just like, oh, man. But I'd asked him if he watched it, and he had told me that he watched it, and I was just like,
he
didn't watch it.
Yeah.
But then he had told me that I wasn't ready, and that I wasn't going to be ready for a while. And I don't know, that kind of lit a fire underneath me, and I started, you know, recording promos and putting them on my social media every day, and that actually caught the attention of Vince, which really? Was I think a writer had showed Vince my promo on social media, and I got brought up to 205. I believe I only had about two matches in NXT before I got brought up to 205, and then I was only in 205 for about 4 months before I got the call to Raw, and things were just moving like pretty quickly, and I was on Monday Night Raw with Bobby in that manager role.
You were like his mouthpiece.
Yeah.
It was good too.
Thanks.
Yeah, very obnoxious and almost like Kevin Hart or something along those lines.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, so, yeah.
Vibe like that.
That's honestly I was watching a lot of Kevin Hart.
Were you? There you go.
A lot of Kevin Hart. Yeah. You know, anything that I do, I want to put my all into.
Yeah.
And if somebody is telling me you need to get the people to hate you, I'm going to get the people to hate me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did. I kind of, in a way, I think looking back at it, I think I completely changed my entire personality.
Yeah.
You know, I dove deep into that character. And,
so what was the character exactly?
Just loud, cocky, brash, flashy. It looked like a kid that had a lot of money that didn't know what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
So when you came in, like when you finally got up to WWE, did you have a meeting with Vince, or did you have a meeting with somebody to say, here's what we want from you?
I remember talking to Paul Heyman. Paul was really invested in what me and Bobby were doing. And he was the first one to kind of coach me through that first promo that I did on Monday Night Raw with the like low weights, high reps, and like screaming at Bobby and telling him that he looks like money and he smells like money and stuff like that, just silly stuff. And he had told me that Vince wanted to talk to me about it. And I remember going to Vince's office and he wanted me to be Bobby's hype man. And
Vince, I want you to be his hype man.
Yeah, I didn't know what that I didn't know what that meant.
I just love it. It's like an 80s rap term, isn't it?
Yeah,
like Jam Master J was DMC's hype man, sort of thing, right?
Yeah. But I mean, that was just all such a crazy time for me. Things moved so quickly. And, you know, me being like a lifelong fan and literally dedicate my life to wanting to be in WWE. And for all of that to have happened within the 3 years that I was there, I never really had a chance to digest anything.
And once again, you're very young.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
A lot of times, like, and you're still very young, but a lot of times when something like that happens, you think, well, this is just the way it is, and it's going to last forever.
Yeah.
You know, I did it. And then you realize that it's not just getting there. It's figuring out how to stay.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And another thing too, like what you mentioned, if you really embodying this persona, and you mentioned earlier that people thought you might be an asshole or whatever. I had the same thing when I first went to WWE, and my mission was to be the millennium man, the guy that's going to save the WWE. Everyone's so boring. Everybody sucks except for me.
Yeah.
Except for those guys on the roster who actually thought I was saying it for real.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is just a character that Vince wants me to portray. But they're like, this motherfucker thinks he's better than us. You know, who does he think he is? And then the heat comes down, right?
Yeah. But I think, and somebody has said this to me, I believe it was my wife who said this to me the other day, but anything that is trailblazing is not going to be, you know, it's not going to be an easy thing.
That's right. That's a great point.
The first person to do something, they're not going to have a person to look at and say, this is the mode on how it's done, or this is the path and how to, you know, everything that you're doing is new. Everything that you're doing is innovative. You're trying to create this path. You're trying to do something historic. And I feel like that has been my journey in wrestling. You know, I'm trying to do something that's never been done before. I'm trying to move in a way that nobody's ever moved.
What you have to do.
Wrestling. You know, I don't want to just be in the bunch. I want to stick out. I want to be the person that everybody's looking at and saying, like, man, this guy, it seemed like it was impossible, but this guy did it. And that's what I'm doing. And that's why I'm here. That's why I want to, create those opportunities for other people. I want to open up the door for people who are trying to do the things that I'm doing, even the things that you're doing. I mean, even what you're doing with wrestling and music, you know, that's super inspiring to me. You're showing me that it is possible.
You can do it, right?
And that's such a cool thing. It's a really cool thing.
Yeah, well, I want to talk about some of your rap stuff, but before, let's just talk about some of the highlights that you had with Bobby, because once again, what was it, 6 months? Was it that long?
It was about nine months that I was with Bobby.
Some great stuff was happening. Tell me about some of the highlights that you remember from that time.
Oh, man. Okay, well, the first thing, just because of how crazy it was me pointing at Bobby's ass and saying, this is his favorite pose for like the people like watching, which was so ridiculous, but it was hilarious. That was pretty funny. I remember all of the stuff that I did with Finn, was pretty cool. That was around the first time where I was starting to get a couple of matches on Raw and people could see that I can actually wrestle and stuff like that. Stuff that I did with Elias, with him saying, you know, whose kid is this? When I was cutting my promo on him, that was cool. The Bobby picking me up and trying to put me on his shoulders, but he just completely threw me over his head and I almost fell out the ring.
Too late. Yeah.
That was some pretty cool memories that I have with Bobby.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When did things start looking like they were going to end on the main roster? What really happened with that?
Oh, yeah. I remember being on the road with Bobby. And, you know, at the time, Bobby was the champ. He was the Intercontinental Champion. And he was all over the place. You know, he was at all the signings and the meet and greets and, you know, all the live shows and everything. I wasn't making the money that Bobby was making.
But you had to make all the towns.
I had to make all the towns. And I remember being on a tour in Canada. And I remember looking at my bank account. And I was like, I can't do this anymore. This doesn't make sense. I'm losing money. And I really, it's getting to a point where I just can't afford to do this anymore because I have kids. I have a wife. I have responsibilities. I know I might look like a kid, which I am, but I have a lot of responsibilities back at home. And I wanted to have a serious conversation with, Carano and Vince, and just try to figure out, how I can start making more money, within the company. Like, why am I not on these meet and greets with Bobby? How am I his mouthpiece? But I'm not.
And you're paying to do it.
Yeah, I'm not. It was a strange thing for me. I felt like I was doing a lot of work. I felt like I was a waiter. I felt like I was doing a lot of work for not that much money. And it was just getting to a point where I couldn't take it anymore. And I remember bringing up the conversation and saying, when are we going to be able to, can I get some merch? Can I raise? Can I be on these meet and greets or sign-ins with Bobby? It just doesn't make sense. And I don't think that they liked me being so vocal about it. And I should have, been appreciative of the opportunity that I had, which I was super appreciative. But at the end of the day, it's business. I'm a businessman. That's not just, my catchphrase in AEW. Like, it needs to make sense for the both of us.
Right.
I just don't think they didn't take that kindly. I was put on hold for weeks. I was told that I was going to talk to Vince. But writers are telling me, oh, he's busy this week. He'll fly you out to Connecticut when he has time or whatever. And we'll call you when it's that time. I didn't hear anything from them for 9 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
At home for nine months.
I reached out to them. I tried to get in contact with somebody, and nobody ever got back to me. And I just said, fuck it. I remember I was about to move to LA, and when I was in LA, I got a call from Hunter saying that he wanted me to be on NXT because they just got this new deal with USA Network. I was on USA for Raw already, so I think he wanted people who are on USA to try to push some more eyes onto NXT not being on USA. But the first thing that I said, and it's so crazy, the first thing that I said to him was, when are we going to talk about this contract? Like, it's been 9 months. You can't just call me and say, how have you been? It's like, how do you think I've been, man? like I haven't been good.
Funny how that works, right? Hey, Leo, how you been?
Yeah, I just can't. I just want to get down to the business right away. And I think that initial first conversation with Hunter just automatically made things weird for me. And I thought that was going to be the turning point where we kind of got on the same page, but unfortunately we never did. Mm-hmm. And, I got the Cruiserweight title put on me. Under the other deal. And I knew that was going to happen. I was kind of beating myself up for that because, I should have put my foot down a little more.
They do that from time. It was like, here's the title. And listen, like you mentioned, title's great. Thank you. But business is business, man. Don't think I'm going to just be so excited to win a title that it's like, this is great.
Yeah, it was bittersweet for me.
Yeah.
It was bittersweet. I wish that I enjoyed that moment a little better. But, at the time, I just couldn't stop thinking about, man, I feel like I've now been put in a position where I'm going to look like even more of an asshole because I have to bring this up while I have this title on.
Right.
And it's things just started to, downward spiral. And we just weren't on the same page. And that's when I got released. I knew that I was going to, I felt like I was going to get released. Because nobody was in communication with me really. And that was pretty much that.
And that was that was during the pandemic when they released a whole bunch of people, right?
Yeah.
There's a dozen or whatever it was.
Yeah. There was a lot. That was a scary day.
I remember I asked Tony when that happened. You probably recall it was April.
April, yeah.
And I said, is there anybody on here that you're interested? I think Miro was one of those guys. Mm-hmm. He said Miro, and he specifically mentioned your name as well.
Wow.
Yeah, right out of the gate.
That's amazing. Tony is so cool. He's just such a real, from my experience so far, just a very open and honest person. You know, I remember when he said that he was interested in having me a part of AEW, that he had went to a NXT Coconut Loop show when they were in Florida, I think Jacksonville specifically, and he had went and saw me on that show, and he had told me that I like stuck out to him, and I thought that was pretty cool.
So when you were off during this time, is that when you started doing more with your music, or because I know you've released a couple records, records, whatever that means nowadays, a couple Spotify, Spotify tunes, a collection of Spotify tunes. Yeah. Was that kind of more concentrated on after you got let go, when you kind of had not a lot else going on, or were you kind of always doing that in conjunction with being in wrestling too?
I was always kind of doing. I think when I first started to really dive into it was when I had that little hiatus from Raw, where people were trying to figure out what was going on with me. I was trying to keep myself busy, and I had already put out a single like maybe about a year before this, and people had said that they wanted to hear more stuff from me, so I took that time to put out more music and just see where it could go, if people like that route that I was taking. I was putting out songs me singing, I was putting out songs with me rapping, just seeing what people gravitated towards. Just testing the waters, and I think when I got released and I felt like I could no longer be in Florida, just from PTSD and trauma and that, and I said that I wanted to really try to pursue music, and I ended up moving out to LA and working with some pretty cool people out there, and ended up getting a manager who got me connected with a lot of different A&Rs and writers and just people who are actually, me saying that I wanted to do music and trying to do it in Florida, it was a whole other thing when I went to LA. These people were, doing it every day, nonstop. This was their life.
Right.
And I wanted that to be my life.
And that's what you have to do. You have to put everything into it, yeah.
Yeah. So me doing that, I don't know, it opened my eyes up to the possibility that this is possible.
When you're doing your raps, for example, do you come up with a beat first, or kind of is it lyrics first, then the beat, or vice versa? Kind of what is your style?
I love creating melodies. That's the first thing that I, my writing process, I'll listen to an instrumental, or even if I'm creating from scratch with the producer, I'll try to get a melody and record that first, and then I'll write to the melody, and that's kind of how my songs come about. But yeah, I'm always melody first for me. Yeah.
Well, good melody sticks in your head forever, no matter what genre of music is. I would say a good melody could be rap, thrash, ska, doo-wop, pop, metal, whatever you want. A good melody is a good melody.
Yeah.
That's what sticks in people's heads.
Yeah.
So for the music that you've released so far, have you gotten like a lot of good response, a lot of listens, a lot of hits?
Yeah, I had a song that I put out a little while ago called "I Wonder," that's been doing fairly decent, especially for somebody who didn't really know what they were doing. I think it's got like maybe like 130K
straight
on Spotify.
Yeah, that's great.
But this new EP that I put out called "Not Found," I think me putting this out was for me to kind of this was definitely a turning point for me within my music. I think I found my voice. I think I found what works for me. I think it was my intention was to kind of wake people up in a sense of this isn't just a hobby. This isn't this isn't a gimmick. I'm sure you can relate to the overall stigma of wrestling and music is very strange.
You mentioned something earlier. It's something that I've said for years. You have to work twice as hard to get people's respect just because of the job that we're in.
Yeah.
You know, and once they get over that, then it's just a good song or a bad song.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter if the guy's a wrestler, a pharmacist, a pilot, whatever. You know what I mean? And you do have to get over that with people because they'll constantly be looking for a reason. Oh, he's just a wrestler. Or,
yeah.
You know, be like if a rapper got into wrestling. Oh, he's a rapper. What's he doing? Heaven forbid people can do two things.
Yeah.
So you have to, like I said, work really hard to let people know that you're legit about it and not just doing it as a cash grab, not that you're making any money off it anyways, as we all know. So that's the first thing you have to do. And once you do that, then you'll have people's attention forever.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, this EP has been perceived like pretty well. I think it is showing people that I'm pretty serious about my music. Mm-hmm. And, it's a beautiful thing. It's, you know, I think with the pandemic and me, you know, that was all that I was doing, you know, during the pandemic, because that was all there was to do.
Yeah, there's no independent shows to go to or anything like that.
Yeah, so I was just in the studio. I built out my garage. I made it into a studio, and you know, I was working with a producer that I was pretty close with, and I was just recording. I was just recording all year, and it was more than music, like for me, like listening to it. Listening back to it, I think music has just helped me in life in general. I think music has helped me find who I was, like, as a person.
Mm.
I think it has helped me cope with, you know, anything that I was dealing with in my mental health.
Some healing powers to it, right? Yeah,
for sure.
What has anybody of you know, prominence in the music world, rap world, heard it and give you any encouragement at all?
Yeah. So I've actually been going to a lot of events lately because I just got a manager. I mean, I've been doing so much by myself for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a weird thing to kind of give somebody control of something that meant so much to me. But I started working with my manager, and he's been getting me to a lot of like different events and things out in LA, and meet a lot of different people in the music industry. I remember I talked to Paul Abdul at one of these events about my music, and just learning from like different like legends and people who have been just in the business for so long. I think that's the part of it that I'm really enjoying, is just learning the business part of it. Cause you know, anybody can just record a song and put it out, but to actually be around people who are you know, doing things like behind the scenes and like going to different, you know, networking events and just talking to, whether it's a producer or whether it's an engineer or whether it's, you know, somebody who is working with a label, a bigger label or a smaller label. I think just learning that aspect of it is pretty cool to me. But yeah, I'm very fortunate to be in the position that I'm in today. And I think everything happens for a reason. Mm-hmm. So I always say everything happens for a reason. And I think how everything has lined up for me was supposed to happen. I think this injury was supposed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's given me the time to sit down and think about where I want to go and who I'm doing it for and why I'm doing it. And even giving me the time to focus on my music. And, you know, during that time when I was hurt, although I was like rehabbing every day, you know, I was trying to pursue music too. And I made a lot of connections that I probably wouldn't have made if I was on the road like constantly. But I think having those 4 months to kind of regroup and, you know, introduce to people what I'm doing and what I'm trying to do has helped so much.
Mm-hmm.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When you were going to retire, leave the business. You mentioned you were going to fulfill your commitments with New Japan. Had you been working with them for a while? Was it for New Japan Strong? Did you ever go to Japan with them?
I didn't go to Japan. I was supposed to go to Japan, but visa issues. Mm-hmm. But I did the Super J Cup, and they were in LA for that. Okay. So I did that. I did a couple of the Strong tapings. And yeah, that was pretty much it. You know, there was plans for me to go to Japan, but it never happened.
Especially right now, it's hard to go over there as it is. How were the Strong tapings?
They were cool. They were strange because there was no, you know, when I didn't think my first experience with New Japan was going to be in front of no
in a gym in LA in front of no people, right?
Yeah. It was cool. I really liked it. But like I said, it was a little strange, especially, you know, wrestling and not even hearing, you know, commentary. Like, oh, well, no, I could hear the commentary.
Oh, actually, yeah, you could hear the commentary.
Yeah, I could hear the commentary. As I'm wrestling. And I thought that was pretty crazy because there was no crowd noise. So
was there any Japanese guys there, or was it all their American guys?
There was no Japanese guys there. I believe that there were maybe a couple of people that were in the dojo, but no, yeah.
That's straight to your first New Japan experience in America with Americans in front of no people.
Yeah. I'm like, I wrestled on the indies with you guys a couple of years ago. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. But no, it's cool. Like, I think just the opportunity to be able to wrestle on their platform and,
well, they're seeing you too, like you said. Yeah. It's good to know that they wanted you to come to Japan. It's just not the right time, you know, until they open up a little bit more, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I saw a couple matches that you had when you were coming back with, I'm not sure exactly what it was, Atlantic City, outside, that sort of thing. You had like a moth.
Oh, man.
Tell me about the Mothman costume.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. This is such a funny story. So, oh, man, this is so great. When I was in NXT, my second go around being in NXT, I remember randomly getting to tapings one day, and they were playing my new video screen on the Titantron, and I saw a moth, and I was asking them what was the idea behind the moth, because you know I was just using moth for like Man of the Hour. And my logo was a clock. So for them to have inserted that moth and them being so stuck on the moth thing, I was like, okay, I'm gonna go with it. So I got some gear made, which was this outfit that you're talking about, this orange vest with wings, and there's a mask for the entrance. I remember bringing it to tapings one day, showing Hunter. I even went through I rehearsed the entire entrance. And then I remember Hunter comes out. And he's like, what is this? And I was like, oh, because I think I had a big match for the NXT Cruiserweight title that night. And I wasn't being featured on like the takeovers. So I was like, oh, maybe I should do something cool for my entrance. This is a big match.
Right, for TV.
A big title match for TV. So let me just do something cool for my entrance. And he said that he didn't understand it. He said that it had nothing to do with my character, and that I was trying too hard. And I was like, you guys made this moth a thing. So I'm trying to make sense of it.
Right.
And I thought it was pretty funny because he, you know, he would dress up as the Terminator at WrestleMania.
That's right,
So I was like, what do you mean? It doesn't have anything to do with the character. And I was doing too much. I thought that was pretty, wild.
Yeah.
But
it's so funny. It's classic WWE, man. He's the moth. He's a moth.
Yeah.
He's a moth. Yeah. I thought for sure that must have been coming down from Vince, but I didn't know about the Man of the Hour thing.
Yeah.
But then when you show up with a costume, you're trying too hard.
Yeah. I was like, man, that's so crazy that you're saying this. So I end up wearing it once at this show that for GCW.
Like, you bought it already. You're getting your money.
Yeah, I know. I got to wear it once. Yeah, but that's so funny that you asked that question. No, but yeah, that's how that came up.
I forgot about the Man of the Hour. That's a great nickname.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, where'd you come up with that?
I really don't know. I don't know, but
it's an old school wrestling term that they used to say, like, I'm the Man of the Hour, the man with the power, the man too sweet to be sour.
This is right, because I remember being at the PC and I remember seeing a Dusty statue, and there was different quotes on the statue, and one of them was like, Man of the Hour, man with the power. So I thought that was pretty cool. I think now, looking back at it, I think it's so fitting to me that I've called myself the Man of the Hour.
Mm.
Because just in life, I care about time, like, so much. Like, I'm like obsessed with time.
Oh, and very punctual, like, you mean? Or what do you mean?
Yeah, like, I never like being late. Mm. I like respecting people's time. I like getting the most out of, you know, the time that's presented to me.
That's
and
cool.
Stuff like that. And I don't know, it's pretty fitting. Yeah, it's pretty fitting. It's cool.
I was going to ask you before, too, how'd you end up with the name Leo Rush? That's a cool name.
Yeah, what a weird thing, because I try to, you know, being a wrestler and wanting to be a wrestler, I never even really thought about what my name was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. I just never thought about it. And then when it got time for me to do shows, I was like, oh, shit, I need a wrestler name. And I was just calling myself L.I. Green. My real name is Lionel, last name Green. And
can't call yourself Green when you just
started. I know, yeah. So I was like, this can't work. And this cannot work, because I need to change it. And I was just, I couldn't think of anything, because I didn't want to have some random first name that just wasn't, you know, had nothing to do with me. So I was just looking at my actual name and just looking at all the letters and, you know, just chopping out the last three letters, and I saw L-I-O, and I was like, oh, that looks cool, mm-hmm. but I can't, like, call myself Lio. So I was just like, oh, like Leo, mm-hmm. but spell it with an I. And I remember my trainer, he always told me to slow down when I was when I was training, because I was so
nice.
I was too quick. I was too... I was doing everything so fast because I was green, and he always told me to slow down, but I never could. You know, I would try to, but I never could, and just my movements were always, like, so quick. And he always said that I was in a rush to learn. Mm. I was in a rush to get to the next thing and move forward and stuff like that. So I thought that was pretty cool. So I just put two and two together, and that's how Leo Rush.
That is cool. It's a rush when you're in the ring, and a rush to watch you. It's very cool. Last couple questions for you, dude. So now that you are here in AEW, and we've seen a couple vignettes and promos of being a businessman, all that sort of stuff, what's kind of the vibe of your character, and what are you planning on now that you're actually here? What does Tony want from you, et cetera, et cetera?
I think ultimately Tony wants me to be me. I think
he, which is great.
Yeah, he wants me to he wants to give me an opportunity to shine, and I think with him seeing, you know, the only thing that he saw me with was being, you know, in WWE, he obviously knew that I could talk and I could cut a promo, so he wanted me to, you know, give me this talking role on TV, which I think is I like it a lot. Mm. I think I've always been a fan of, you know, guys coming in and having those, like, vignettes and those promos to build up into something pretty cool. My overall goal within AEW, I think I looked up to Rey Mysterio a lot. I think that has been my only true, you know, example of what the possibility of what I could be, like, within the company.
Absolutely.
I want to be a world champion.
That's what you should say.
Yeah, yeah. I want to be a world champion. And I'm willing to do any and everything to get to that point. You know, however, you know, however many hours I need to put in. Like I said, I've never been afraid of the hard work. You know, I've never been a promo guy, but when I got handed that role, I took it very seriously.
I became
a promo guy. You know, I take my in-ring work like very seriously. Well, I haven't always been, but I feel like I'm moving in a direction where I'm becoming more open and more relatable, and people are hearing my story. And I feel like I have a very unique and powerful story, you know, because it's real. You know, everybody goes through, you know, ups and downs throughout their life and their career. And, you know, people always like a good comeback story. People always like, you know, people who aren't going to stay down when they fall. You know, I'm a fighter. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a fighter, dude.
Are you a different person now at 26 than you were at 22?
Incredibly, incredibly different. And it's so cool that I'm saying that.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up a lot, and I'm so grateful for everything that I've been through. You know, I used to ask myself, you know, why me? Why am I going through this? You know, I've worked so hard to be here. Like, why, you know, why aren't they going, you know, my way? Why aren't things going my way? But I think I needed those hard times. I needed to go through what I went through in order to know what I know now. And mm-hmm. Like I said, this is a second chance for me. I think everything that I went through in WWE has prepared me for this. I think what I'm about to do in AEW is going to be miles ahead of what I did in WWE, and I'm really looking forward to it. Mm-hmm. Because I, you know, I'm applying everything that I've learned, all of the knowledge that I have now. Like I know not to fuck up in certain situations. I know how to navigate certain things. I know what the industry is now. I know what the game is now. I know a lot. I feel like I now have the keys to success.
That all comes with experience.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a very self-motivated person, and you know, I'm not gonna settle for anything less. I know that I'm not going to stop until I am, you know, at that point where I want to be.
You want to be, yeah.
That is a world champion. I want to be that next. That next, you know, small guy that everybody's like, holy shit, like, and you know, it's not talked about, you know, too much. It's not talked about too much, but I think that it should, because it is important. But you know, African American like representation within mm-hmm. the industry is huge, huge mm-hmm. for me. I didn't have a lot of, you know, especially a lot of guys that were, you know, black and my size, you know, in the WWE when I was watching WWE.
Still don't.
Yeah. And it's crazy. It's crazy. And I look at myself and I'm like, I can be that person, you know, I can be that person. And that motivates me, that continues to drive me. You know, I want to be that person for other people. It's not just about me. Mm-hmm. It's never been about me. It's always been about, you know, whether it's about my family, you know, people who look up to me. I want to be an inspiration to other people, because, you know, there were people who inspired me. Yeah.
That's a good goal to have, for sure. Yeah. Last question for you, man. What's your favorite match that you ever had?
Ooh, my favorite match that I've ever had so far. It's so hard to mm-hmm. pinpoint that.
Sure it is.
It's so hard to pinpoint that. But I really enjoyed, I keep saying that, but I really enjoyed the stuff that I did with Angel Garza.
Angel Garza. Yeah, of course. Oh, wow.
I think that was the first time where they kind of let me loose. They you know, told me to just go out there, have a good match. And people still talk about those matches today. I always get messages, you know, saying I really enjoyed the matches that you had with Angel Garza and NXT. So I think those are my favorite matches that I've had so far. But I think, if I'm being completely honest, I think my favorite match hasn't happened yet. I think it hasn't happened yet. there's so many guys here in AEW that I'm really, really looking forward to wrestling. And I'm gonna get better. I'm gonna get better because I'm always wanting to learn. I always want to get better. Mm-hmm. And I think the guys here are gonna make me better. And I'm excited for it.
Well, dude, it's great to have you here, man. And I'm not gonna let you retire again. You gotta stay here for a while. I'm not at 26. Yeah. I'm 50. You'll be here till then, at least.
Yeah.
Thanks, dude.
Thank you.